Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the man who's screaming from the rooftops for the big banks to help out America's small businesses, the Robin Hood of small business.
Now, don't be sure with the banks. Hell, we fired our CEO and he barely got out with $50 million.
That poor man, is he okay?
Well, as okay as you can be in the north of France.
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for staying with me. Thanks for being part of my day. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already and you're still here, well, we consider that a sign of high intelligence. David Rock is with us. We consider him an example of someone with high intelligence. He's one of the leaders in helping people understand about how the brain works. In fact, his book is titled Your Brain at Work. And he travels around the world talking to people about how you and I learn things. How we process information. How do we stay focused? How can we make sure that our brain power stays focused on the things that it should be focused on? David Rock, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Good to be here with you again.
It's good to have you here. I use the word education because you've been working a lot on lately on the idea of educating our young people. And talk to us a little bit about what you've been working on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I travel a lot, and you know, since I saw you, I've probably been giving talks in 12 different countries since I spoke to you last time. And people always ask me the same questions. You know, I'm there to talk about their brain at work, and they always tell me, well, this is great, but you know, I need to do something about my kids. I need to do something about education because my kids are really struggling, or I need to understand how to help them best. And that seems to be what people are interested in. So lately I've been talking to a lot of school principals and giving talks in schools and really starting to focus a little bit on this whole question of how do you create the right school environment that enables kids to learn. And it's a really tough question because, you know, when you dive into the brain research, you kind of start to see that we're doing just about everything wrong in schools if we want kids to learn.
Well, you know, when you talk about an environment, I'm not sure environment is as big a problem we got today as the way we're programming our children to think about themselves, to think about competition, to think about seeking excellence. It seems to me that a lot of society and our school systems are manufacturing mediocrity instead of manufacturing excellence. Am I wrong about that, David?
No, I think you're right. I mean, one of the things that's great about science is that we get to try to get more accurate theories. And theories, even though we don't realize that theories inform our behavior massively and often unconsciously. And there's, you know, the theory that emerged in the 70s, in the 60s and 70s, which was, you know, all about self-esteem.
Yeah.
And, you know, you needed kids to be, you know, given lots of self-esteem and all of this. And
I'm okay, really, you're okay.
Yeah, and there's an aspect of it that's right, but it got really misinterpreted and used the wrong way, kind of by accident. And I don't think anyone saw this coming, but what we did by sort of, make, you know, trying to give kids lots of positive feedback and not having anyone fail and all that, is we accidentally created a situation where kids don't really get challenged. They don't really get stretched. And we're sort of coddling them massively.
Because everybody gets a trophy these days, don't they?
That's right. Everyone gets a trophy. Now, the trouble with that, now, there's, you know, it's a subtle thing because if you have a hyper-competitive environment, that's not good as well. But we've gone too far the other way. And what's happened is you've got kids who, you know, are not necessarily stretching themselves. Now, let me tell you, from a brain perspective, it's very, very important that kids grow. And when I mean grow in the brain, what they're trying to do is get better and better at managing more and more difficult situations in two areas. Firstly, just cognitive situations, like, you know, add up more digits at once. You know,
right.
That's growing. But the more important area, funnily enough, is they need to be growing in their capacity to manage more and more uncertainty and more, you know, what we call threat.
Do you think that our young people are not prepared as well as they should be for that?
Absolutely not. We're kind of coddling them. We don't want them to be too challenged, you know, too stretched.
One of the ways we're doing that is, for example, you know, we pick them up and take them everywhere they have to go. We don't let them play with kids. We arrange play dates.
Yeah, I know.
Fear
culture, partly. It's partly because of the fear and the, you know, things that happen.
Yeah, but that's and of course, all of this is manifesting in the people who are entering the marketplace, even as we speak.
Absolutely. They're not comfortable with uncertainty. They're not comfortable with complexity. And, you know, they're not creative in when there's uncertainty, which is terrible, because that's the thing that we need the most. We need people who are creative and able to innovate. The kids, you know, they need to grow in this capacity to deal with strong emotions, essentially. They need to be able to learn to regulate their emotions. And, you know, those two words, emotional regulation or self-regulation, they're absolutely critical for development. And there's a study that was done, you know, quite a while ago now.
Hold on to that thought, Dan. I'm going to let you start off with that study. One of the things, folks, that, you know, the younger one thing that's interesting about this younger generation, the very younger generation, the millennials, they are coming to the marketplace with some skills, more skills than I came to the marketplace when I was that age. And so I want to get David to talk about those two things. We'll come back after these messages. 20 till. David Rock is our guest. Stay with us. Crazy people like it. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks very much for staying with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Hope you check it out when you get a chance. Lots of stuff there that will help you with your small business. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. And, of course, if you're on Twitter and you want to follow me there, I'm at Jim Blassingame. David Rock is our guest. His book is called Your Brain at Work. And that's what he talks about, how we can actually focus on, think about, the way our brain works and apply it a little bit better. And that's what we're talking about right now, specifically in the area of the younger generation, primarily the millennials, the Gen Ys, the folks who are coming up just now, coming into the marketplace, and even younger. David, you were talking about the education system.
Yeah.
For most of these young people, that toothpaste is already out of the tube. I mean, there's not really... We're not talking about anything that we can change there. All we can do is, you and I, as people who are already in the marketplace, who are going to be employing these people and managing them, and probably some of them are going to be our customers before too long, if not already. What we got to do is we have to be able to deal with how different they are from us.
Absolutely. And there's a couple of ways that they're different. You know, they're coming out and they're used to making a lot more connections. They're used to, like, having an idea and then going and acting on it straight away because of the digital age. And we didn't have that. We had to, like, hold an idea and mull it over and go to the library the next week, you know. And so they're more impatient in that way. At the same time, they're more productive in another way. They're also, and I believe this goes back to the self-regulation thing, I believe that they're much less comfortable with uncertainty and less effective at
regulating. You were just telling us about that. You also were talking about a study.
Yeah, it's very poignant. You know, there's a study, and I'll just give you the cliff notes. It's such an interesting thing. They basically, it's called the marshmallow experiment, and they got kids to...
Okay.
The marshmallow test. They got kids to in a lab, and they'd give them a marshmallow, and they'd say, if you can not eat that marshmallow for the next 15 minutes, I'm going to give you a second marshmallow. And if it wasn't a marshmallow, it was a cookie or something they really liked.
Yeah.
And the kids who basically... could not eat the marshmallow, and this is 4-year-olds, by the way. Kids who could not eat the marshmallow for 15 minutes versus the kids who had to eat it, you know, straight away, there was a 210-point difference on their SAT scores down the track. And
the kids who could wait had a higher grade average.
Massively higher grade average. And this this showed up right through these people's lives. This inability to regulate emotions and put off gratification,
deferred gratification,
this capacity just showed up through the person's life as they studied these people. And what it comes down to is a particular brain region. Actually, it's the right and left temple. There's a brain region that's involved in breaking or stopping urges and stopping things. And it only gets built by practicing it, by developing it. You've got to get better and better at managing. To stop yourself from more and more things, and that's how it develops. And we don't give kids really the chance to do that. They're sort of not getting a chance to regulate strong emotions or to feel like they're getting kind of tougher in a way, mentally tougher. And I think that's one of the things. We're sort of coddling people And too much emphasis on self-esteem, not enough emphasis on character growth.
Right. And so as these people come online and they become our employees, how do managers deal with that?
You know, you can change people a little bit in the workplace, and you know, a lot of my day job involves that. But you've certainly got to be aware of these people and their needs. And you know, they like a lot of certainty. They like a lot of the big picture. They like to be able to have a lot of autonomy as well. They like to be able to you know, make their own choices and feel like they've got a big say. But you know, they're people who are not very patient. They're probably going to work for a few years in a firm and then move on.
That's one of the main things I think we're going to find with this younger generation is how itinerant they're going to be, I think. And maybe I don't know if that's the right word to use, but I think it probably is. They're going to be itinerant. They're going to be moving around more. They're going to be less planted in the ground. But here's an interesting thing that I've observed, David. When I was coming up, I'm older than you are. When I was coming up, I had to conform 100% to my boss, to the organization that I joined. Today, we're spending a lot of time talking about the marketplace conforming to this younger generation. Yeah. And I think that's just being codependent with them. What do you think?
Yeah, there is a little bit of that. You know,
I mean, I don't do that in my operation. When the young people come on board, I mean, I try to get the most out of them. They have some things to offer that I didn't have, as I said earlier. But I also, you know, they have to operate in my organization.
Yeah. I mean, I do something with, you know, we hire
it's
someone every
love.
Week lately. And we give people tests. We give people a test. They don't know it's coming. They don't even know it's a test. We give them something which sees, you know, how well they think under pressure. And do they fall apart under pressure, or they, you know, thrive under pressure. And we kind of give them all these surprises that they didn't know were coming, and see how they handle it. And the people that throw their hands in the air, we know that, you know, they're not going to survive a month in the workplace. So,
right.
And that comes back to self-regulation. The capacity to stay cool under pressure is, you know, is really central.
Do you recommend that that employers find a test like yours, or buy yours, or whatever, if you sell it? Do you recommend that we give prospective employees that kind of a test to see if they can handle it?
It's happening a lot. It's not something I sell, but it's happening a lot. And certainly there are organizations who create those. But I think we get a month into working with someone and we find out, you know, as an employer, we find out that they're really not, you know, there's not a fit. And we need to get better at assessing people.
Right.
And not just an IQ assessment, but actually seeing what they're like.
What's your, David, I got to take a quick break. What's your website?
ResultsCoaches.com.
All right. Hold on to that thought. The book is called Your Brain at Work, David Rock. And I will be right back. 10 till. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, Little Atlanta Rhythm Section, bringing us back. 7 till. David Rock is our guest. He's the author of Your Brain at Work. His website is resultscoaches.com, right, David?
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, the book website is Your Brain at Work with hyphens in the middle of all those words.
That's it. Your brain at work, hyphens.com. Yep. And the book's available. Neuro Leadership.
The book's available wherever leadership. Books are sold, right?
Absolutely. Everywhere. It's been doing well, actually. It's been
congratulations.
Really popular here. I'm pretty pleased with it. Yeah.
I'm not the least bit surprised. All right, David. One of the things that the young people that I'm hiring are really good at is the new media.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
especially social media.
It's a big conundrum right now, and I wrote a paper on this. It was kind of controversial, and it, you know, great to talk about it. It's you know, I started to wonder recently, looking at what's happening, if our minds might be going the way of our waistline. there's a bit of a problem.
You mean getting mushier?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't mean getting wider. We're not getting broader.
You're talking about getting mushier.
it's rather unfortunate. There's something that's happening with social media. And don't get me wrong, social media is neither good nor evil. It's you know, it's just what it is.
It's a tool.
It's a tool, and it's a very helpful tool, and I use it, and it's very good. It's got an interesting quirk, though. It's got like an unexpected quirk, and it's like saying, you know, sugar. You know, sugar is neither good nor evil. It's, you know, it's kind of tasty and it's helpful. But what's happened in the world now is that there are literally, and Jim, this is amazing, there are literally more people overweight than there are starving in the world, literally.
Wow.
That's a stat
I hadn't thought about it, but it makes sense.
There literally is more people overweight than starving. And one of the big factors for that, literally, is empty calories, you know, particularly sugar,
mm-hmm.
the body loves. And, you know, empty calories everywhere. Now, what manufacturers do is give people what they really, really want and really don't need and get addicted to easily. Now, what's happening, what happens in the brain when you, you know, have a donut or, you know, something really sweet is you get a big spike of the reward center. Makes you really happy for a short time, then you crash, but you know you keep wanting to do it.
Yep.
And it's very easy to get people addicted to that spike. Now, what's happening with social media is when you feel connected to other people, you actually get the exact same spike
in the same
region of your brain.
Yep.
It's the brain classes social connections the same as sugar and other primary resources. And so you get the same kind of high. And the trouble is on social media, you don't get the sort of settling effect that you do when you bond with someone in real time.
And it becomes seductive, doesn't it?
It does. And so you've got this addiction. And the trouble is, if you spend hours and hours, as many people are doing, many people are spending a big chunk of their day in social media, it actually creates a kind of dysfunction because of the neurochemistry that it activates.
Hmm.
And it activates the kind of neurochemistry you get if you're sort of standing at a slot machine all day hoping to win, and the same kind that you get if you're sort of bouncing around 1,000 people at a conference and getting really hyper. It's great for being hyper. It's terrible for deeper thinking.
Well, one of the things this is why I have been what I've been talking about to my audience about using social media as a tool, not as a means to an end, not a way of life, and not just being on social media, but developing a social media strategy.
Yep.
Because with a strategy, you engage and you disengage.
And here's part of that strategy. I'm going to say something controversial. Part of that strategy has got to be you limit yourself to a very clearly defined amount of time a day because it is delicious.
Yep.
It is delicious. And we do not have very good self-regulation muscles. You know, the brain, I've been talking about self-regulation earlier. The brain is not good at self-regulation. It's one of our weakest brain systems, actually.
Our stomach is actually better at regulating than our brain is, isn't it?
Oh, that's for sure. That's for sure. So it's really, really important to say, right, I'm going to spend, you know, 30 minutes a day, 1 hour a day, 2 hours a day, whatever it is, but stick to that because it is delicious and it's more interesting to your brain. You know, it's more dopamine, more interest, more fun.
Is this harder? Is this going to be harder for the younger generation to do self-regulating on?
It is absolutely harder. And
when they come to work for us, we have to establish parameters and guidelines, don't we?
Definitely. You're definitely going to need to do that. And it's going to be very difficult to say you can't have it. And I think it's going to be more like, you know, feel free to do it. And, you know, if you're doing it any more than an hour a day, we're probably going to see productivity loss. And I wrote a post on this on the Huffington Post called Are Our Minds Going the Way of Our Waste? And, you can see it and you can see the science behind this and some of the links. And there is some good research showing that, you know, people who are doing this, there's a drop in their mental performance. And there's all sorts of stuff. And the funniest one was just a couple of weeks ago, a study came out.
David, I'm sorry, but we've just run out of time. But you've always got so much to tell us. Will you come back real soon?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to come back.
Thanks for being here, David. David Rock, ladies and gentlemen. The book is called Your Brain at Work. And, again, his website, resultscoaches.com. And you can find David's book wherever books are sold. He'll be back real soon. He's got a lot more to teach us. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.